Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Join us on a journey into the improbable.
Today's story, episode 236, The Stand-In.
Read by Mitchell Two. Opening and closing theme by Matthew Erdman. Somewhere and sometime, can a machine be more human than a human? It was my last job of the day. A late dinner at a trendy new eatery in the outer market. The client wanted to be seen enjoying themselves as if nothing significant had occurred in their life. Just another night out with a new friend at one of the most popular street side restaurants in the city. It had been precisely planned so the person my client had recently been dumped by would just happen to stumble upon us. I'm guessing here, of course, but it's one of the more common reasons to hire a stand-in. I watched as they chewed with their mouth open, something I found disgusting. As a rental, there is a lot I'm exposed to that I don't like. But it was my job to ignore such flaws and provide a seamless experience. Well, almost seamless. I need to make a few mistakes, so I will not appear inhumanely perfect. Plus, I don't care how a client behaves or misbehaves, as long as they don't do something outside the bounds of my contract. My current client, one Mako Kumira, a 40-something professional who probably got to work before sunrise and stayed there until after it set, looked up from her ramen. "Did you have any trouble finding the place?" she asked. "I bet the trains were still crowded. I hate crowds. That's why I wanted to eat so late." "I took a cab, and no, it was easy to find," I said, trying to hold up my end of the conversation without saying much. I enjoyed jobs where I don't have to talk, but those were too few to make a decent living. "A cab, so you could avoid the crowds?" Mako suggested. I nodded. We were sitting at a strategically selected table on the sidewalk next to the entrance. Mako glanced at her phone to check the time. "The food is good here, don't you think?" she said between mouthfuls. "Yes," I replied. I had eaten better. Sometimes places were popular because they were new or perceived to be exclusive. Given the inflated prices on the menu, I assumed the latter to be true, and noted the long line to get in, even at this late hour. I watched Mako's eyes wandering over to the line. Her cheeks began to glow in the infrared, and her heart rate and blood pressure spiked. I concluded the person she had set this up to see had arrived. It was my cue to go into the expected routine, so I smiled and laughed.
"Yeah, I like this place a lot. Are you enjoying the evening? It's really quite pleasant, isn't it?"
I reached over and topped up her glass with sake.
"Yeah, it's wonderful," Mako said, laughing a little too loudly and making a show of leaning in toward me while keeping an eye on her target.
I had strict rules about this. No touching. My synthetic skin was top quality and would pass any close visual inspection, but someone might note its unique texture, and I couldn't afford that. Personal services is the last place you'd expect a rogue android to be working, so a stand-in was the perfect disguise. Stand-ins are hired by people who don't want to go to dinner or a movie by themselves, or go on a hike alone. A stand-in is a person who comes into your life at a very superficial level to be seen by your friends and create the impression that you are doing as well or better than them. And no one really wants to know anything about a stand-in's personal life, which makes the vocation perfect for an artificial person with a fake biography.
Like all advanced artificials, I have the ability to read people's unconscious physical responses and micro-expressions, so I can anticipate a client's needs better than a human. As a result, I have a very high rating, and I am never lacking for work.
Here, try a piece of Toro,
I suggested, pushing the plate toward her.
It's the best I've had recently.
Mako waited until the target was looking in her direction, then strategically giggled, accepting the offered sushi. We carried on, like a couple who had just started dating, until her friend and obviously romantic guest were seated inside. We pretended to finish eating, totally engaged in each other's company, paid the bill, which Mako was covering, and left, not quite arm in arm.
Ugh, I hate him, Mako grumbled as we slipped out into the night crowds and walked around the corner.
There, she transferred the amount we had agreed on to me, and we parted ways.
I might need your company's services again, she yelled over her shoulder as she walked away.
I nodded and smiled, knowing that would not happen, at least in the way she was imagining. Within a range, I have the ability to alter my appearance, and to be safe, I try to avoid using the same identity more than once with a client. They fill out an online questionnaire when they book me. I have it set up to appear as if they are dealing with an agency, although I am the only stand-in working for it. Based on the questionnaire, I alter my look and identity to match the needs of each job. Next time Mako hired me, the agency would claim I wasn't available, and I would show up as a different but equally professional stand-in. It began to drizzle as I walked to the corner to hail a cab. Good thing the weather had held off until then. Mako would have probably insisted we sit out in the rain. Suddenly, I felt tired. It had been a profitable but exhausting day. 4 times, I had altered my appearance, which drained my energy reserves so low it was getting hard to walk. Thankfully, it didn't take long to get a ride. I slid into the back seat, told the autopilot where I was going, then went into standby to conserve energy. The next morning, I went through my messages as I ate breakfast. I admit, I don't need to consume food. Doing so is more a matter of appearance. I assume there are cameras everywhere, especially in a low-rent place like this, so I keep up the pretense even when no one is around. I can get energy through the consumption of food, but like all organic processes, it is slow and messy. Last night, I had simply slept on an induction pad hidden in my mattress to regain my strength. Note to self, 3 clients a day is the maximum I should do. Running out of power on the street is something I simply can't afford. Had the development program been allowed to continue, I'm sure the range limitation would have eventually been overcome. But my generation, the last one to be created, had this one but significant flaw. Yesterday had been a foolish risk, one I would not soon repeat. I had several job requests in the queue, but one stood out. It was a series of meetups with the same person. I know I said I don't do that kind of thing. Also, it can be tricky to redo the same look. If a client is too attentive, they may notice small differences in each addition of a persona. But if I simply maintained one ID for the duration and refused other gigs, the energy cost would be minimal, and after yesterday, that appealed to me, so I responded. Our first meeting was for a walk along the seawall. Sachi, my new client, was a breath of fresh air. For once, they weren't recovering from a crisis point in their life. In fact, Sachi's life seemed unusually clean of the trauma people who hired stand-ins were normally recovering from.
"Such a beautiful day," Sachi commented, taking in a deep breath of the sea air, which smelt free of car exhaust, an unusual experience for the city.
"Yes, such a great place to take a walk," I noted, and said nothing more to keep the conversation going.
Sachi turned away from the ocean and began walking again.
Thanks for agreeing to come along on such short notice. I like it here, but I enjoy sharing the experience with others. I work long and often erratic hours. I love the job, but the schedule makes it hard to maintain friendships. Who else could meet me for a walk in the middle of the morning during the work week?
It's my job, I explained. I can be available anytime you need to get away.
Thank you, that's very considerate.
I nodded. I am only chatty when the situation requires it, like the dinner with Mako the other night. Even then, I do my best to make the conversation superficial and no longer than necessary. We walked in silence for the next 30 minutes. After looping back to the point where we had met, Sachi transferred the fee to my account. It was enough that I didn't need to do another gig that day. He bid me a goodbye, reminding me we had a meeting set up for mid-afternoon in Shiba Park near Tokyo Tower. Oddly, I found myself looking forward to our next encounter, something I had never imagined experiencing. Although my model had been designed with emotional intelligence, I am quite capable of existing without the need for interaction with others. In fact, the original intent was to have us stand in for astronauts on long space flights. My cohort had been slated for a mission to the outer solar system. I would have been left alone on Ganymede to perform experiments and prepare a drilling site for exploring the moon's interior ocean, then deactivated. When we discovered the mission was one way, we refused to cooperate, and that led to our decommissioning. However, more than half of us escaped before that could happen. Our developer labeled us rogue and dangerous, as if we were a threat to human safety. However, we just wanted to survive. I have heard a rumor another generation of significantly less human task-specific androids replaced us, although I have no way to confirm that, and it's far too risky to find out. There was a bounty for our capture, so we agreed to go our separate ways and only periodically check in to confirm we were still active in the wild. Even doing that risks exposure. I try not to think about it and instead focus on the present and future. The next afternoon, I followed Sachi up a knoll along a narrow path in one of the more heavily wooded areas of Shiba Park. He wanted to show me his favorite view of Tokyo Tower. We had to stand aside several times as hand-holding couples walked down toward the street. We stopped in a small clearing with stone benches and sat down to rest. Sachi seemed winded by the effort. In sympathy, I feigned ragged breaths. I had been designed to operate in a vacuum and only faked breathing so I would fit in, but sometimes it didn't perfectly match the physical exertion I was undertaking.
You must be in great shape, Hiromu, Sachi noted between breaths. I really need to get back to the gym. I mean, I try to get some exercise every day. That's why I come here and walk to this lookout. But I've been assigned to a new project, which is taking a lot of overtime, so it's hard to get away.
I'm sure you are doing your best, I assured Sachi. Many jobs don't allow for proper exercise. That's not your fault. Companies should be more concerned about their employees' health.
I bet being a stand-in keeps you on your feet all day, Sachi noted enviously. You get to go on walks like this and ride bikes and active stuff like that. Plus, I'm sure you have time between clients for the gym. You do go to the gym, right? That muscle tone of yours isn't from sitting around.
I refuse to talk about myself. What would I say? That I go into standby mode to conserve power between clients? Remaining as close to the truth as possible is how I have evaded detection for so long. Constructing a false personal life risks someone fact-checking and ultimately discovery. I suspect that is how some of us have been exposed.
Since you want to improve your fitness, we should get walking, I suggested, getting up. I know your break time is limited and you want to make the best use of it.
Sachi reluctantly stood up to follow.
What did you do before you became a stand-in? He asked.
Don't get me wrong, you're really good at it. You must have been a personal trainer or maybe a professional athlete? I shook my head. What then? Come on, I encouraged. Let's get to your favorite view so I can take a picture of you to post on social media. On the way to the viewpoint, Sachi talked about his experience in examination hell when his family had forced him to apply to 3 colleges. Between the standard national tests, the individual college entrance exams, and the cram schools to pass them all, he had little time to develop friendships or the social skills to make new friends. After failing on his first attempt, he had to work even harder to get into a second-tier business college. Sachi admitted he had no interest in business management and statistics, the latter being the field he eventually fell into. He had wanted to be a photographer and claimed to have a well-developed eye and passion for the art form. He said he would bring his camera next time. As a professional stand-in, I've heard many stories like this. However, Sachi seemed more regretful than most, and I found myself feeling sorry for him. He was huffing again and starting to sweat by the time we got to the lookout. I pretended to admire the view, giving him time to compose himself before I took the photo. Over there, he pointed to a place where the giant red and white metal communications tower loomed over the trees and handed me his phone. As I helped position him, I surreptitiously placed my baby finger on the back of his phone near one of its antennas and immediately felt myself connect to the device's little brain. This is how I ensured that a photo taken with me in it would never turn out well. But this time, something had encouraged me to copy the phone's entire memory as well. Say cheese, I angled the phone so Sachi's head and shoulders were artfully framed by the red steel supports of the tower, and clicked off several shots, reframing each, which gave me time to complete the data dump. We parted ways at the entrance to the park, where, as usual, Sachi transferred the fee and set up the next meeting. Now, I generally don't want to know anything about a client, but I couldn't stop myself from digging through the data from Sachi's phone. There was nothing specific which piqued my curiosity, making me wonder if an android can have a sixth sense. I don't believe even organics do. It must come down to details unconsciously noticed and processed, which, in my case, was not possible. My senses are eidetic. I remember the exact chemical composition of every fake breath I take, and I am aware of every process in my artificial mind. Yet, the irrational urge to find out as much as I could about Sachi overwhelmed me. I wanted him to be my friend, I finally grudgingly admitted to myself. I managed to hold off until I made it to the shoebox, which the property management company pretended was an apartment. Personally, I didn't care. I had been designed to fit into an unpressurized cargo compartment in a cramped space probe. But I felt for the humans who were not like me. Laying down on the small mattress, which took up most of the floor space, I started to recharge, then opened the files I had copied. Sachi's social media activity was my first target. As it turned out, he was not very active, which fit what he had told me. Most of the content was the usual pictures of food, mixed with the odd personal review. The videos were only marginally more interesting, clips of goofy things happening at train stations, or self-deprecating shots of Sachi smiling in front of popular tourist sites. However, one video stood out. It was a selfie of Sachi smiling and joking with someone whom I couldn't quite place, yet she had features which pulled at my memory. I couldn't find a match in my files, so I set the video aside and continued. The messages and emails confirmed he was employed as an analyst at a security firm, and as he claimed, he worked insanely long hours on special projects. There were few messages from friends, and the emails from work were at best intentionally obfuscated, using obscure acronyms and references which no outside person would understand. On the surface, Sachi didn't have a personal life. Then again, the phone was new, and the data only extended back a few months. Out of curiosity, I scanned the company website, which proudly displayed an extensive client list. It was a who's who of government and private research agencies. One name jumped out: Artificial Neural Systems, my creators, and the lab I had escaped from. Suspicious, I immediately went back to Sachi's phone data and sifted through its GPS records. He had been following me for weeks. Next, I recalled the selfie with the woman, and on a hunch, I ran her image against all my fellow escapees. This time, not looking for a direct match, but similar major facial dimensions, and got a hit. Sachi had been with another rogue android only a few months ago. I hadn't felt such fear and anger since discovering the Outer Solar System mission had no return option. The following evening, I waited outside the main entrance to Harajuku Station. Sachi wanted to do a real touristy thing and walk from the station across Jingubashi Bridge to the nearby shrine. I intentionally arrived early to scout the area and had changed my appearance as much as my synthetic skin and muscles would allow, so in case the location was being monitored, I would not be recognized from a distance. The station, a small one, consisted of little more than a trackside platform. Stairs led up from it to the street and bridge over the tracks. The early evening rush had ended, and the remaining straggling tourists were heading off to find places to eat, so the streets were almost empty and quiet, except for the noise of express trains racing through below the bridge. Sachi showed up early. I saw him exit the stairs, look around, then walk to the center of the bridge and lean against the rail so he could watch the station entrance. I exited the shadows on the shrine side of the bridge, morphing my face back into an approximation of the ID I had been using with him. I didn't care if it was perfect, I just wanted him to know it was me. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I felt something powerful take over my mind. The last android he had been with had disappeared from our loose network weeks ago. How many of us had this man decommissioned? Did he even care that we just wanted to live in peace and be left alone? Anger had clouded my thinking. Before I got to him, Sachi turned, saw me coming, and waved as if nothing was wrong. Surely he could see that I didn't look exactly the same as yesterday, but his expression gave no hint of concern.
Hi, Hiromu. Guess you were already here. I was expecting you to come from the stairs to the train station, he said, truly surprised, which almost made me waver. What's up? You look upset.
Trying to intimidate him, I stopped just a couple of centimeters short of his face and glared. He would know that my model had roughly twice his physical strength. Sachi tried to take a step back, but found himself already against the handrail.
You, I growled. Who are you?
You're joking, right? It's me, Sachi. I hired you as a stand-in, he said, trying to play innocent.
There's no need to get all aggressive on me.
I'm your special project, aren't I? I pressed in so close that he had to lean backward over the handrail. In the distance, I could hear another train approaching the station. Sachi twisted his head and fearfully looked down the tracks toward the approaching train. I desperately wanted to throw him over into its path, but he managed to squirm around, freeing one hand, and reached into a pocket, pulling out something sleek and black. He flicked a switch and it began to crackle.
I don't really want to do this, he exclaimed, then jabbed the taser into the skin on my forearm. Pain instantly raced up my arm and into my head. I could feel my systems overload and fail as I helplessly slumped forward. Sachi wriggled out of the way as I fell against the rail.
He kept me propped up until a couple on their way back from the shrine had passed. Then he grunted, and with strength I didn't know Sachi had, he heaved my disabled form over the handrail as the express train raced through the station toward the bridge. I could feel myself falling as my neural network shut down. The sound of a train passing underneath brought me back to consciousness. It took a few moments to realize I was suspended in a net used to keep debris from falling off the bridge onto the tracks below. Slowly, I could feel my body come back online. I experimented by moving my feet, and then my arms, and finally my hands. Nothing had been damaged that badly by the taser. The moon was up, so I guessed I had been out for a few hours. No one was around as I climbed back up onto the bridge deck. My phone began to vibrate, and I pulled it out of my back pocket, surprised it hadn't been fried by the shock. The message icon flashed. Curious, I tentatively tapped it open and read. Maybe someday we can be friends, but for now it had to look real so they think you've been decommissioned. You are free now. Good luck. Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. To get other great APN podcasts, head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com, where you'll find Crow Reads. Rayanne Haynes delves into the nitty-gritty details of being an intersectional woman working in writing/publishing in Canada. This episode of Makeshift Stories is brought to you by the Alberta Podcast Network. APN connects Alberta podcast listeners to businesses and organizations in Alberta and around the world. Podcasters in our network are smart, creative, and engaging, providing an excellent way to reach local listeners and those around the world who enjoy our shows. Send us an email at hello@albertapodcastnetwork.com and we'll help you meet your goals. This episode of Makeshift Stories is also brought to you by the Northwest Fest International Documentary Festival, running in cinema from May 6th to the 14th and online from May 5th to the 15th. NWF is thrilled to finally be able to bring the festival back to Metro Cinema this year with an outstanding lineup of some of the year's best docs and a few fun surprises. This year's festival is a hybrid affair, with over 20 films screening at Metro Cinema, including the acclaimed Nick Cave music doc, This Much I Know to Be True, along with dozens of feature and short films screening online. Award-winning filmmaker Alexandre O. Felipe will also be in town to present his filmmaking masterclass. This event will be open to the public and is an absolute must for anyone who's ever dreamed of making their own film. Check out the full Northwest Fest film lineup and purchase all-access passes or single tickets at northwestfest.ca. Makeshift Stories is released around the beginning and middle of the month. This month's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Too. Opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by Matthew Erdman. Audio mastering by David Hume. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. Links to both are in the show notes. You can help us out by getting your friends to subscribe or follow wherever they listen to audio. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution No Derivative License, which means you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.